Indians, a well-deserved off day. My goodness, with the makeups and everything they've had to do. A little rest before Kansas City gets in here for the weekend. Boy, Carrasco was great yesterday. And it's going to be Cavs-Celtics Game 1 Sunday, is that right? Mike Snyder's got all your sports coming up in 4 minutes.
Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder. Your 5 to 9 news feed on News Radio WTAM 1100.
Might be a cool, wet Mother's Day weekend, but Matt Granite, the deal boss, Channel 3's Morning News, Wills Ways to Save. He's been thinking about Mom all week. And another deal this morning, Matt.
Tech the halls for Mother's Day or anyone else looking to charge on the go. Great to be with you. In my hands, a Consumer Electronics Show award-winning gadget from CES. This is amazing. This will charge 7 devices simultaneously from 1 outlet. Quick charging on the go. Let me show you how it works. The brand new charge hub can handle 7 USB devices simultaneously, from cell phones to tablets, MP3 players, gaming, Bluetooth headsets, navigation units, cameras, mobile hotspots, power banks, you name it. A single power supply eliminates all of those excess cables. It keeps everything organized. This will safe charge everything from the most demanding iPhone or Android to whatever it is you need. This performed better than anything else we've tested. It has a small footprint. All the slots you need, again, only 1 outlet needed. This is the power strip of the 21st century, complete with a 1-year warranty. This item, which is not a paid product, is waiting for you on facebook.com/dealboss, where you can find this and other great deals.
Watch Granite on 3 this morning, back here same time tomorrow with the little fashion deal for Mom for Mom's Day. WTAM.com, keyword save. You'll find a link for Granite, the deal boss. And I don't think Mom would want that. Boy, Dan probably want that for Father's Day. WTAM.com, keyword save. Check it out. President Trump didn't get much sleep overnight.
This is a great honor. Hopefully everything's going to work out at the highest level. We want to thank Kim Jong-un, who really was excellent to these three incredible people.
They President really Trump greeting the North Korean released detainees, as they're being called, overnight. We'll have more on that story coming up for you in 5. Bill Zimper will join me on News Radio WTAM 1100. Good news, though, with them being home. Mike Snyder Sports Mornings, 15:45 past. Morning, Mike.
Good morning, Bill. It went down to the final seconds in Boston last night. Celtics looking to wrap up their series with the Sixers. They were clinging to a 1-point lead.
Smart tried to miss it on purpose, and he made it. It rattled in. So the Sixers are going to get a look here. Down by 2 with 2.4 to go here at the end of Game 5. Simmons holding it. Long touchdown pass. Knocked away. Picked off by Marcus Smart. He fires the ball into the air. It crashes to the ground. And the Boston Celtics have survived 4 games to 1.
Yep, the Celtics win it 4-1, 114-112. They prevail, and that means they will meet the Cavaliers again in the Eastern Conference Finals. Kyrie Irving won't be playing for either side in this series as he's recovering from knee surgery. The Conference Finals will begin Sunday afternoon at 3:30. Boston will have the home floor advantage this year. And in terms of some time to prepare, their coach Brad Stevens puts it this way.
3 days is plenty of time to prepare. You know, it's not like they've never watched Cleveland before. We played them in the Eastern Conference Finals last year.
Yeah, these teams know each other very well. It'll be a 3:30 tip on Sunday. Game 2 next Tuesday also in Boston. And then we'll wait till next Saturday, actually a week from this Saturday, for game 3 at the Q, and then the following Monday at the Q for Game 4. The Cavs, after 2 full days off, will get back to work today. They'll be on the practice floor, and now they know they can zero in. It will be the Celtics. Sixers season ends now, but that is a team to keep an eye on going forward. They are loaded with young talent. Indians were looking to salvage 1 win on their road trip in Milwaukee yesterday.
Swung on, and there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Way back there. Home run, Naquin. A 3-run bomb from Tyler Naquin. And the Indians have that big inning they're looking for. 4-0 try.
And Carlos Carrasco, that was more than enough runs for him. He pitched a complete game, 5 hitters, struck out 14. He's now 5-1 as the Indians prevail in that ballgame, winning in Milwaukee. And here is Tyler Naquin on his big hit.
Just so happy to be 4 days in a row for us, but we're good, man. We got a good team. We got good pitching, and we got a steep lineup, you know. Got guys on the bench. You know, whoever's starting that day, you know, the guys on the bench, you know, we got hitters all the way around.
6-2, the Tribe, a winner in Milwaukee, a day off today. They'll open a weekend series against the Royals tomorrow night, and Andrew Miller is expected to be activated this weekend. Tribe now back at 500 at 18-18. Boy, the Yankees are just hot. They've won 17 of their last 18. They beat the Red Sox last night, and an embarrassing moment for former Tribe pitching coach Mickey Callaway, now the manager of the Mets. His team batted out of order in the first inning, and that prevented a possible scoring chance early in a game that they lost 2-1, and Mickey took full blame. Somehow, the wrong card was posted in the dugout and not the one that was given to the umpires. How can that happen in the major leagues? Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio, WTAM 1100.
A little bit of the sound overnight a few hours ago as President Trump greeted the three detainees from North Korea, Secretary of State Pompeo flying back with him. Bill Zimfer joins us this morning on News Radio, WTAM 1100. Bill, good morning. You've been following this for several days, and it finally played out overnight, right?
Yeah, it did. And the three, fortunately, seem to be in good health as they arrived home early this morning at Joint Base Andrews. They will go through some medical testing and obviously some debriefing before they are reunited with family members. But great news, and probably, Bill, the final obstacle to any talk between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. This was a condition that had to be met before there would be any sit-down between the two. So with that out of the way, now the final preparation will begin for a summit meeting, but great news that these three U.S. citizens are back.
Still don't know when and where that big meeting will take place?
Nope. The president says the announcement will come in a couple of days. However, he did say that it looks like the DMZ is out as a possible location. My feeling is that he was talked out of that by his advisors. He had said it looked great when North and South Korea met there, and it might be a great place to do it. So, with that out of the picture, what's left? Well, the other two locations that had been mentioned had been Mongolia and Singapore. Right now, it looks like Singapore is a favorite. I expect we'll get this announcement in the next couple of days, the meeting in the next couple of weeks.
Over to the Middle East, Israel happy we're getting out of the Iran deal. They militarily, though, struck some sites in Syria.
Absolutely. This happened overnight as well. Little rocket exchange between the two. It started with Iran firing about 20 rockets at Israeli compounds in the Golan Heights. Israel then responded with a massive strike. 50 Iranian targets in Syria were said to be hit. Israel's defense minister says that they took out all of the Iranian infrastructure in Syria, simply saying they have to know that if it rains in Israel, there will be a flood for Iran.
Bill Zimfer on the international notes and news of the morning. Bill, thanks.
You're welcome, Bill.
While we're talking internationally, caught up with Elizabeth Economy. She's written an interesting read on China. It's called The Third Revolution. And as Bill and I have been talking, there may have been some back channels with China and North Korea. I want to ask her about that as well. But as far as an economy, and we think about a world economy anymore, let's start with China and the huge economy and the possibilities there when it comes to trade. Elizabeth?
No, China has the largest population. It is the world's largest trading power. It has the largest standing army. It is a country that is full of superlatives, but it is still the second largest economy after the U.S. But it's certainly a country that is growing, and it's one that the United States, you know, increasingly has to take into account and reckon with.
Should we be fearful? What direction are they going in?
Well, I think Xi Jinping has really upended many of the understandings that we've had about China as a country that was reforming and opening up and, you know, had a blossoming of civil society and a growing role for the market and kept a low-profile foreign policy. Xi Jinping, in contrast, has a much more repressive authoritarian state at home and a much more expansive and ambitious program for China's role on the global stage. So I don't think we need to fear China, but we need to reassess how we understand it and refigure out how we're going to work with it as well as compete with it.
On the global stage, talk to me about North Korea. Behind the scenes, has Ping been a mover and shaker with this, you think?
So it's really interesting because, you know, Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, had never met in 5 years.
Wow.
Despite the fact that, you know, North Korea and China are supposed to be allies of a sort, they'd never met until President Trump announced that he was going to meet with Kim Jong-un. And so all of a sudden, Xi Jinping got energized. And I think the Chinese were, you know, very taken aback. And so Kim and Xi met. And they've met twice now. And I think, you know, for China, they really want to make sure that their interests are represented in whatever kind of deal Kim Jong-un and President Trump may strike.
Elizabeth Economy, the book is called The Third Revolution. The Chi-Coms, of course, as Rush refers to them. Catch Rush Limbaugh, his take on all this news that happened overnight, and who knows what will happen between now and when he takes to the air. Following the news at noon, Rush Limbaugh here, News Radio, WTAM 1100. The Cohen story over the last 24 hours, money, where'd it come from, how we're tracking it, Stormy Daniels, what's the latest?
Well, it looks like you saw a guy in Michael Cohen go from a real estate attorney to President Trump's personal attorney to now, after the election, some sort of a consultancy that he opened up where, according to multiple reports, following the election, he aggressively pitched himself to potential clients, reminding them of his closeness to the most powerful man in the world and receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars from powerful companies based both in and outside of the U.S., including AT&T and the pharmaceutical company Novartis. Now, I don't know whether or not right now, as they investigate all this, Bill, whether or not there was any illegality there outside of him not registering as a lobbyist on some level, and there could be some scrutiny that comes under that, as well as some for bank fraud and possible campaign contributions from foreign donors.
The money to Stormy Daniels, though, that's where they want to know where it came from?
Yeah, and that's where some of these murky waters are coming into play. They're looking at the possibility of numerous companies donating to the same shell account that was used by Cohen to pay Stormy Daniels here, one of those being Russian oligarch Viktor Vekselberg and his cousin, who made about 8 payments to Cohen through a company called Columbus Nova. And what they're saying is that Viktor Vekselberg gave that money, over $500,000, company owned by this Russian oligarch. Did that payment or part of that payment go to Stormy Daniels? So that's where they're trying to find out all of these deals. Now, what's interesting, too, is that according to reports, Robert Mueller earlier this year stopped that very Russian oligarch at a New York City airport, questioned him, looked through his electronic devices, and seems to be about 4 months ahead of the game compared to when we're hearing about the story now. He's already talked to AT&T. He's already talked to Novartis as well.
You get an oligarch involved, then it's really going to get noisy here, I think.
Yes, exactly. That's what's drawing the most attention at this point. That's where the biggest microscope is going to be.
Michael Bauer on it. Thanks, partner.
You got it, Bill. Have a great morning.
You too. Also, speaking of following the money, kind of interesting, the Treasury Department has opened an investigation, according to USA Today, into whether bank records belonging to President Trump's private lawyer were illegally leaked to a lawyer for porn actress Stormy Daniels. Those records that Michael's talking about show Trump's lawyers took payments from different corporations, including a telecom giant AT&T and this drug maker Novartis, to seek favor with President Trump. Treasury says those records should not be out in the public, but somehow they were leaked. All eyes are the golf world and sports fans looking forward, I think, to what happens at the Players as the marquee grouping today. Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, and Ricky Fowler. First time that Phil and Tiger have played together in a few years. Matter of fact, last time Woods and Mickelson played in the same group came in the 2014 PGA Championship. The Players will get underway later this morning. Don Pageant, our golf guy, runs the Bridgestone Invitational at Firestone with us on the hotline. Hi, Don.
Morning, Bill.
Hey, guys, before we talk about the TPC some and that event, Bridgestone Invitational, Don, since we last talked, Jim Nance really touched, I think, by the announcement that this year he'll receive, every year you honor someone, as the ambassador of golf, right?
Well, you're right. Our tournament week, August 1st through the 5th, that Wednesday, we were honored Jim Nance as our Ambassador of Golf winner. Class act, Jim Nance, golf's a big part of his life. He played collegiate golf for the University of Houston, and Fred Couples was actually his roommate. So he's been involved in the game for a long, long time, and Jim's wife's actually from the Cleveland area, so I'm sure he'll have a lot of family there, and very, very, very deserving. What a guy Jim Nance is.
Well, Don, we are now really kind of, I think, really getting into so many great events coming up in golf and the TPC getting underway today. As Bill mentioned, that terrific threesome of Tiger, Phil, and Ricky. And there you have another threesome like with Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas. That's going to take, I guess, second billing. But I wanted to ask you, even in a tournament where you don't have this high profile, how much gamesmanship goes on really in that head-to-head where it's not match play, it's really you against the field? But how much kind of goes, you know, into the match, the strategy, even when you're playing against somebody in a stroke tournament like this?
Well, TPC Sawgrass, home of the Players, one of the most difficult golf courses on tour. So the golf course is hard enough. Most of the guys will have to just focus on taking on the challenge of the golf course as opposed to thinking about the other players or what's going on from that end. Not until Sunday afternoon on the back nine, we maybe start to play it a little bit differently if you're in the lead compared to what the rest of the field is doing. But it's really imperative to put the ball in the fairway. You've got tough, undulating greens, and, of course, that tough finish with 16. Of course, the island hole, 17th green. And then the 18th hole plays is the toughest hole in the course, long par four with water all the way up the left side. So makes for an exciting finish. And I'm sure we'll see a great tournament this weekend.
And this is, yeah, the tournament. You mentioned the island hole. This is the tournament where people that maybe don't even follow golf, they'll see that. They'll say, hey, I want to watch the guy tee off on that hole. What is, kind of take us through that. What is the biggest challenge for the golfers with that hole?
Well, I think it's just not to get too greedy and to shoot for the pin. I mean, it's only 137 yards. If you put the ball in the middle of the green, try to get two putts and par and get out of there, that's usually the way to play it. What makes it tricky, though, is the wind. And if you're not sure if you have the right club, if the wind takes it a little more than you think, it can jump up and bite you. But just try to get your three, get out of there. If you make a putt, make it two. But if you get a little bit too over-aggressive, boy, a big number is lurking.
Don Pageant, Bridgestone Invitational, August 2nd through the 5th, Firestone South, they'll play it. And I can get a ticket, right?
You can. Now you can go to BridgestoneInvitational.com. We've got a new daily Ultra Club ticket.
I saw great that, yeah.
16th hole, and includes your first Michelob Ultra for 21 and over.
Excellent. All right, round one, TPC, Sawgrass, the Players' Championship today. Don back with us again tomorrow morning. Don, appreciate it, pal. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
With what a matchup. 152 today, by the way, the tee off, with Tiger, Phil, and Ricky Fowler. And I keep thinking, and they're needling back and forth, I guess, Tiger and Phil, about maybe they'll get in each other's pocket. There'll be a little money, I think, on the round. I mean, it's a tournament, don't get me wrong, but those two like a little action, shall we say. I'd love to see, one of these days, to reignite maybe, you know, they used to do the skins game over Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah, right.
Get Phil and Tiger, Ricky and maybe Dustin Johnson.
All right.
But play for their own money. In other words, they each put in a half mil. So you got a $2 million pot. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The board of directors that run the noon game at Medina Country Club.
Yes.
ATM, Larry Seiler, Ray Eckert, Steve Minnick, shout out Jack Heim. They could set up like a little game where, you know, the modified scoring with a point for a bogey, three for a par,
yeah,
five for a birdie, have some skins. But have them get... They're getting in each other's pocket. I think that would be fun to watch.
Well, it would be. The problem is, Bill, I think they'd probably get a $2 million guarantee to just play,
yeah,
it,
just
right?
Just to play. And
so
then,
maybe they'd make them 2.5 and put, yeah, the $5
million, put the
what you suggest in there, or the $500,000, right?
152, they'll tee it up today. Yeah. Should be a fascinating threesome.
It will be, yes.
All right. Great golf movie. Funny, of course, Caddyshack.
Yeah.
Later this morning at 7:50, Kenny Loggins. I'd always heard this story that, you know, he wrote for lots of movies over the years, Footloose and all. Anyway, that he actually, when he was sitting and watching the first take or the first few scenes of Caddyshack, to write the music, he had to be inspired somehow by the music of Bob Dylan.
Yeah, that's right. Well, quite often the director will put in music where he wants or she wants music in a scene, and that music that they put into the movie is called Tempt, short for temporary.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of get the idea of the feeling that they want in that section.
And from listening to Dylan as he's sitting with headsets on, they got Dylan dropped in.
Uh-huh.
He somehow wrote I'm All Right. So
wow.
I'll explain more about that. Kenny Loggins, a whole interview coming up at 7:50 this morning. He'll be in town with our Contemporary Youth Orchestra performance. He's looking forward to it. You'll hear him talk about it at 7:50. Severance Hall, Cleveland Orchestra. Get on the phone, 216-578-1111. Caller 11. I'll set you up a pair of tickets. You want to get involved, buy a ticket, be a part of this. Should be a special night. CYOOrchestra.org. All the info, SeverenceHall.com as well. 7:50 this morning, my whole conversation. He gave us like 10 minutes. Can't wait to talk to him. Kenny Loggins. We appreciate the time of one Kenny Loggins. He's coming to town May 21st for a special performance with our Contemporary Youth Orchestra. WTAM 1100, this is Bill Wills. Kenny, I know you're busy. Thank you for your time, first of all. We appreciate it.
No, you're welcome.
You know, I was thinking you're going to play with a 115-piece, the youth orchestra. Correct me if I'm wrong, five kids, you could have your own youth orchestra around you, couldn't you?
I practically do. I've been doing a lot of mentoring of teens for stage stuff lately because, you know, we had the big mudslides in Santa Barbara. And so there's been quite a few benefit concerts to try and help rebuild people's lives and homes. And so it's been an interesting time for me. I've actually been doing a lot of work with teens. So this is going to be an extension of that and pretty fun for me.
Kenny, kids have meant so much to you over the years. You've been recognized for your work with the hunger problem, with the lunch program, I know, a couple of years ago. I mean, we know you work with the books and all. You really look to the youth, don't you?
I do. At this time especially, I think it's the nature of things as we get older to want to pass something along that you know you've learned. And, you know, because of my own children, I feel fairly confident about working with younger people who really want to learn the stuff I know, which is basically all about making music and recording it.
And I guess that's my sense. What a special opportunity for the players in the youth orchestra to be with you that night here at our beautiful Severance Hall, youthful musicians who it really sounds like you'd like to somehow affect and let them know where you're at in life and how you got to where you are?
A little bit. I know that it would seem that way, but it's not so much that I want them to get to know me as I want to assist them to know themselves and to be able to express themselves creatively. And I'll give them a few shortcuts because I've learned quite a bit about that.
Kenny Loggins with us for a couple of minutes. Now, you've performed in all sorts of different settings, orchestras in the past, I guess traditional. Have you worked in this setting before like this?
No, I haven't. This is the first time. And the kids have so much vitality, so much energy and excitement. They bring it to their music. I'm really looking forward to this because we're reinventing a lot of the songs to be really the way they would play it. And so I've only brought one person from my own band, my guitar player. And so they're handling all the vocals. They're handling all the instrumentation and dynamics. And my stuff is not easy. So this is going to be fun.
You know, it's fascinating to me, the interpretation of one's music. You've written so many hits that other people have performed. So in a way, this gives, you know, these wonderful people involved in the youth orchestra a chance to interpret, if you will. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. They're completely reinterpreting my material. I'm doing Whenever I Call You Friend with one of the kids. Just one of the young girls is singing it with me. And
yes,
doing a couple things from my album Leap of Faith, which is being completely reinvented. So, you know, it's going to be a challenge.
Kenny, that night, so many of the parents will, you know, drop names from Caddyshack. Some of these younger, some of the kids, though, know from the work of the writings that you have had and really the success on the book front. The Footloose, you finally got off the ground, right, with National Recording Registry as well. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Yeah, no, thank you. It just keeps climbing. It's the way it's seeped into pop culture over the years is amazing. I took it and rewrote it as a children's book.
Right.
A couple of years ago, and it's still climbing and doing really well. But the completely different lyric, the point of view, you know, of being the animals in the zoo getting out at midnight and dancing under the light of the moon, so they're all getting footloose. And it's really fun. It's something that I've been asking the parents who have kids that are discovering that song to send me videos of their kids dancing to it. We'll put something up on the website.
Kenny, two final things, if you don't mind. Caddyshack. I finally saw a story where in the process of writing with movies, sometimes you see the movie, they ask you to write. Sometimes you write something that maybe is dropped into the movie. If I understand the story right, something called temp music? There was a Dylan tune that they had to some of the tracks of Caddyshack. You took from that and then wrote it. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, quite often the director will put in music where he wants or she wants music in a scene. And that music that they put into the movie is called temp, short for temporary.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of get the idea of the feeling that they want in that section. Sometimes the tempo, but usually it's the vibe of the song that they want to try and capture. And if they're going for music that's written for the movie and not just pulling tracks off of people's records, it gives you an opportunity to write something that's right on the money. And the temp song they had at the opening of Caddyshack was a Dylan thing. So from that, I got that they were trying to say that the kid is a rebel and that he is different, even though he spends the whole movie trying to fit in. And so I just got the idea of I'm all right from that song.
Hey, finally, my sense from listening to your music, from reading about you, there's a bit of a perfectionist in you because it's an art form. So I want to ask you this. As you have heard other people perform your music, you're driving along, you hear it on the radio. You ever want to go back and rewrite something? You're in front of a live audience. You're with the orchestra. You can interpret in different ways. But do you ever think about going back sometimes and rewriting?
Yeah, I do quite often. You know, my band members go crazy because I am constantly tweaking arrangements and adding ideas to stuff. So any frustration that I have on the record, like if I felt like I cut it too fast, I can put it in the right pocket, you know, when I play it live. I actually have one of those songs from Caddyshack, a song called Mr. Knight, that when I originally recorded it was sort of a Andrew Sisters swing kind of idea. But when I play it live, I pulled the groove back and play it more like a ZZ Top LaGrange. So I do get at it from time to time and not leave it alone. But I have rewritten two of my classics, not counting Footloose. Danny's Song, which I wrote when I was in high school.
Yes.
And House of Blue Corner, I've added verses and a new verses to both of those. Danny's Song was a song about my big brother Danny and his coming child, who's now, God knows, 40 something, and maybe 50 by now. And so I added a verse from the point of view of being a grandfather and seeing the circle go around. And then with House of Pooh Corner, I wrote a verse at the birth of my fourth child, Luke. And it was, you know, because when I wrote that song, it was about me seeing that my childhood was coming to an end and that I would soon be moving into the adult world. So when I saw that I was very clearly an adult and about to have my fourth kid, I thought, well, point of view of being a dad, and what's it like to be looking back at Pooh Corner again?
Kenny Loggins, it'll be a special night for so many, as you'll be here May 21st, 7 o'clock at Severance Hall, home of our wonderful, world-renowned Cleveland Orchestra, performing that night with our youth orchestra. Kenny Loggins, Kenny, thank you so much for your time, and especially for your music and all the art that you've given us over the years. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Next up, we now know Boston Celtics Sunday, 3:30. Complete Cavaliers coverage on News Radio, WTAM 1100. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside, and John Michael, who will call it Sunday afternoon on News Radio, WTAM 1100. Update a service of Levin Furniture, the preferred home furniture and mattress supplier to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Hi, John.
Morning, guys.
Okay, guys, early take from both of you on a matchup with Boston. John, what do you think?
Well, you know, what's interesting about it is this is the matchup that a lot of people anticipated, you know, this summer after the Blockbuster deal was made. But the funny part is that the only player from that big Cavs-Celtics deal who's going to be playing for the Cavs or Celtics in this series is Ante Zizic. That's it. I mean, nobody else is around. I mean, Kyrie Irving is it for the Celtics. And, of course, Isaiah Thomas is gone. Jay Crowder is gone as well. And Cavs still have the pick. from that deal. So interesting matchup. I think you got to give credit to the Celtics. I mean, playing without two of their top injured players, and of course Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. They've gotten through two rounds, and it sets up this matchup, which starts in Boston on Sunday afternoon.
And Mike, getting around is getting through it is what we've done so far. What's your take as far as Celtics here?
Well, I think the Celtics are an interesting team to deal with. They really have some guys. I think that they will try to run at LeBron, whether it's Tatum, Brown, maybe even we were talking with Mike Fratello earlier this week. You know, a guy like Marcus Smart, John, just a tough guy. They've got some grit to them, don't they?
They do. I think we're going to see some Morris, too. I think it's going to be, if you ask me, I think Spartan Morris might be the primary defenders on LeBron. And that's the big question, Mike. I mean, the fundamental question when you play a LeBron James-led team is, do you have the player or players who can slow him down? You know, and if you don't, it's going to be a short series. That's the Raptors. They've been looking for three seasons now for a way to slow down LeBron James, and they still haven't found the answer for that. And that's why the Cavs are sitting around waiting for the Eastern Conference Finals after a sweep. So, yeah, they're going to have to throw a variety of players at LeBron and see. You and I had this conversation, Mike. I think the Cavs might need one more bench guy to step up, just one more player to show that he's able to play in the postseason and play under the bright lights. We've seen the play out of Jeff Green, who really has amped up his game after an uneven Pacers series. A couple of guys looking to step up. It could be Larry Nance. Could be Jordan Clarkson if he steadies the ship a little bit. Maybe even guys who we saw in Jose Calderon coming off the bench in game four against the Raptors for this team. Jetty Osmond is another option as well. Maybe one more player, one or two more players who show that they're able to play in that rotation and play regularly. We'll see coming into this Celtics series. But, man, the Cavs appear to be getting better and better as these playoffs progress, and I think that's a good trend, obviously a good sign for this team.
Yeah, the supporting cast certainly has moved forward and seems just to have much more cohesion, and a big part of that is George Hill. I thought, John, when Ty Lue talked about after the wrapping up the series with the Raptors, when he looked back at Indiana, they played much of that series without George, and he brings another dimension, takes some of that ball-handling pressure off of LeBron when you have Hill out there.
Couldn't agree more, Mike. 5-0. After his return, George Hill didn't play games 4 through 6 in that Pacers series. He was banged up, too. Remember, he hurt his back in game one. An illegal screen by Trevor Booker decked him, and he really wasn't quite right the entire series. And if you ask me, I mean, George Hill in that game 7 against the Pacers checked in with 7-12 remaining in the third quarter for the first time, didn't play in the first half, played the rest of the game. He was that effective. And if the Cavs don't have George Hill, we're all on summer vacation right now. I mean, the Cavs don't win that series if it wasn't for Hill and the contributions of Tristan Thompson in that game. So I completely agree with you, Mike. The turnover differential and points off turnovers in that Toronto series was drastic, and in huge part because of George Hill. And it was a Toronto team that was fourth best in the NBA in terms of committing the fewest turnovers in the league during the regular season. The Cavaliers handily won that battle. Huge reason why the Cavs swept. And a big part, if you ask me, I completely agree with you, was the presence of George Hill.
Cavs and Celtics, game one Sunday at Boston, 3:30. Game two Tuesday. Then what, we take a vacation? I mean, it's like not till next Saturday?
Yeah, they take a break.
Yeah, it's a crazy schedule. You're right. I mean, it's like you said, Sunday, Tuesday, and then Saturday before we get going back in downtown Cleveland for game three.
Well, I guess they get everything on the TV thing. That's all. When you have weird schedules, you just say, okay, what's the TV schedule? And that's what they want.
And I agree. And when you have the oldest team left, you say, thanks. You know, I mean, LeBron's played all 82. I'll take a huge break. That's fine for this team. I have no issues with that whatsoever.
John Michael, this time tomorrow morning, Jim Jones' take. John, thanks, pal.
All right, guys.
Game one on the road. That means Cavs watch party time at the Q. The official watch parties at the Q presented by Budweiser. Games 1 and 2. Tickets $5. Cavs.com/tickets. And thank you for being there. Over the last 3 years, the NBA playoffs and the finals, the Cavaliers have donated more than $2 million. Back to Cleveland nonprofits and local charitable programs because you have been there at the watch parties, and they are a blast. Probably as big as the gallery that followed Rosie and I out at spring training this year when they were saying, will you guys hurry up?
Did you get the invite to the players tournament? You're a player, right?
No, I didn't get the invite. Jim Rosenhaus in your morning Indians update brought to you by Falls Motor City. I apologize. I told Scooter, I mean, you haven't had a day off in 2 months. Carol, I'm sure had a long list for you when you got home, and then all of a sudden Scooter's calling you at 8:45 in the morning, but hey, you're getting paid, so I don't feel that guilty.
Hey, it's all part of a day's work, right?
Back home,
How about Carlos Carrasco yesterday? Wow, huh?
Yeah, and, you know, it's nice to see he was just okay the last two starts. And it's funny, the standard now that we hold Kluber, Carrasco, Bauer, Clevenger to, if they give up more than two runs, what's wrong with him? Is he okay?
Right.
You know, that type of thing. But so he gave up, you know, a little bit more than usual his last time out. But yesterday, once he got it going, and it was in the first inning or two, the stuff was down a little bit. But once he really started getting into it, man, he was impressive. At one point, struck out six in a row, and just a great day all around, and he got it done at the plate, too.
14 total strikeouts, 6-2 win yesterday, Mike.
Yeah, and Tyler Naquin, a three-run homer. Jim, we're waiting for this team to get on some sort of a roll. Maybe a guy like Naquin, kind of a forgotten guy from a year ago. He's off to a very good start, isn't he?
He is, and so many times in this game, it's all about opportunity, and he didn't have that much last year. Some of it was because he had a couple of different injuries that slowed him down. So the opportunity came and went, and he missed it. But this year, with Lonnie Chisenhall hurt, there's a great opportunity for him, and he is taking it and running with it and has shown tremendous improvement even over the stretch he had as a rookie when he had a really good rookie season. So it's nice to see, and he has been just a nice steady cog in that offense for the Indians.
Jim, I know it was a tough decision. Eric Gonzalez, of course, is really that utility guy, but they traded Gio Urshela yesterday. That was, I'm sure, tough to do, as they dealt him to the Blue Jays really for future considerations, but that was a tough decision to make, wasn't it?
I think so, but you know what? Better that it's down at the 25th man on the roster than if you're deciding, you know, your cleanup hitter and neither one of them is doing well, that type of thing. So I know it got a lot of attention, but, you know, they have a player who's playing well in Gonzalez. You can't keep them both. So they did what they needed to do. And for Urshela, hopefully it's a nice opportunity to get a chance to play a little bit and see what happens with a new organization.
Now, all the signs have been good toward a return by Andrew Miller this weekend. What's the latest you've heard?
Well, he threw a simulated game on Tuesday over in Milwaukee, and they were going to do some testing with him today. And if everything checks out, you got to believe he'll be activated here over the weekend. But again, and we've seen this so often in the past, with the Indians training staff, they always, caution is certainly the watchword there, especially at this point in the season. If a couple of extra days would be beneficial, they'll take that because it's May. And they want to make sure that he's completely ready and healthy and ready to go. But it sure seems like at some point over the weekend here, Miller could be activated.
All right, Total Tribe coverage, Jim Rosenhaus, Tribe and the Kansas City Royals for the weekend. 7:10 first pitch tomorrow night. Get your tickets, Indians.com. 4:10 Saturday, 1:10 on Sunday. Your off day now begins.
Thank you, Bill.
Have a great day.
Yes, you too.
Rosie on WTAM 1100.